Cast, the official podcast of He Changed It. As always, I am Mike Chisholm. As always, I am excited to be here. I am a broken record. If you've listened to two or three of these in a row, first off, what's the matter with you? Holy cow, thank you very much. I say it every time how excited I am to do this. This is the highlight of my week, coming on here, talking to awesome people about mental wellness in the lens of how it affects men in this time, in this place, in the 2020s. If you haven't downloaded He Changed It yet, what are you waiting for? Holy cow, this thing's starting to take off. It's still in beta. Technically, it's still in beta. We're in the Android store. We're in the Apple store. Search He Changed It. You'll find the app. Please download it. Be an early adopter of this movement, which is literally going to change the world. Also, as I call them, the He Changed It overlords, it's my wife. This is the only opportunity I get to call my wife an overlord and get away with it. Please subscribe. Please share this podcast. We just want to help. You know, in the app right now, there's been a couple stories, and I mean, we were anonymous in the app and the community and all that stuff, but there's been a couple of guys who have come in and been going through some shit. And, I got to be careful not getting emotional here, because it's really neat watching guys come in and help guys who are going through stuff. And it's happening. It's happening right now. And man, it's just exciting and gratifying and all the things to see that happening right now. As always, HeCast wants to be ingredients to a meal that will make our life healthier. And today is no exception to that. We've got a guest on here I'm super excited about, because she's going to talk about, I don't even know what you'd call it, a personality type, a condition, a genetic type, a disposition. I'm not sure. We're going to talk about a lot of things, but one of the things we're going to talk about, HSP, highly sensitive people. And I think that's what the moniker is, but she'll correct me if I got it wrong, but sensitivity definitely affects us differently. I know I'm a very sensitive creature. I know that I, as a man, grew up with the stigma of man up. And as for viewers and listeners of this podcast, you know that we at He Changed It are taking back the phrase man up, and we're going to make it, instead of its traditional meanings, we're going to take it and say, no, we're going to accept responsibility for what's going on here, and we're going to face it full force. That's what manning up is. HSP, highly sensitive people, is definitely a part of that. Claire Kumar is our guest today. And here's the thing I love about Claire Kumar. She has a title that is instantly intriguing. She's a productivity catalyst. She is a coach. She has advised many top tier Fortune 100 companies and groups. And she's in TDOT, but through the miracles of technology, Toronto and Kelowna can be linked right up together. Claire Kumar, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to be part of HeCast today.
Oh my gosh, what a treat to be with you, Mike. Your energy is infectious. I love it.
I appreciate that. Hopefully it's just the energy and not anything else that's infecting you. I appreciate so much that you have taken time to be part of this today. Let's start with productivity catalyst, because it is titillating. It's one of those things that you see that is this person's title. What is a productivity catalyst?
Well, it's grounded in my belief that everybody deserves a really rich, fulfilling life. Let's just start there. This is why I do what I do. To be fulfilled, we need to dance in reciprocity. We need to continually be giving to be receiving. If we turn on our engine to give, then we're nowhere. And if we, you know, we see an epidemic of people sliding and slipping into burnout, into anxiety and depression off the charts now, right? Yeah. And so my whole motivation is to say, wait a minute, I take life coaching, performance coaching, productivity coaching, wrap that all up together and say, we need to look at this holistically. And that's why I came up with the term productivity catalyst, because I want to help people sustain their performance and really keep that giving engine going.
See, I love that, because the idea of the catalyst is you take something, you add the catalyst, and then it turns into something else. Mm-hmm. And certainly everything that you were talking about there resonates. I know so many guys in their 40s right now. We see them in He Changed It. We see them in the research that Candy and her team are doing, that there are people, you talk about the giving. There's a lot of guys out there who have given and given and given and given until they're empty. They give to their families. They give through working at a job they might not like necessarily. They give and they give, you know, they're in the sandwich generation, many of them. They're taking care of their parents and they're taking care of kids. And they give and give and give. The receiving doesn't happen. And guess what? That sponge gets dry. And when the sponge is dry, it can't hydrate anything else. Am I on the right path with what it is that you're talking about?
Absolutely. And it's often unspoken, the challenge that you're, that you just outlined there. We don't talk about this well running dry. We don't even talk about that it's really reasonable to expect to be hydrated in what you're doing, that there should be something that comes back to you in your work and in your community and in your family as well.
What is that? Is that a lack of worthiness that we feel? Is it a lack of, like, why don't, I'm specifically talking about men here who are in this place. And many times it's a quiet place where they don't talk about it. Do we feel that we don't deserve it? Is that a catalyst for those feelings?
I think, you know, we've come through a society that conditions us in a certain way, and men have been conditioned to be the provider, the go-getter, the hunter. And we haven't made room for the full experience of a human. One beautiful book I'm reading now is, now the book is aimed at women.
Sure.
But the messages are for everyone in this book. It's called Fierce Self-Compassion by Kristen Neff. She talks a lot about the state of men in the world and women in the world, and this yin energy, which is softer, and this yang energy, which is stronger. And it's been okay for men to be angry and assertive and get things mm-hmm. done. And women are expected to be nurturing and kind and soft. Well, we need more women to be strong. We need more men to be sensitive. And we need this fully coming together as humans with both a yin and yang energy. And then room for those expressions of both sensitivity and strength.
You're preaching to the choir in the fact that you're talking to a guy who grew up sensitive. I've always been that way. I try and gravitate to being happy as much as I possibly can. I've been told I'm an empath. Don't even know really what that means. Read the Empath Survival Guide by Dr. Julie Orloff. Kind of, I resonate with that. HSP, highly sensitive people. The moment I saw you on the docket as a potential guest for HeCast, I'm like, oh, yep, we're grabbing her, because the idea of the highly sensitive people, I think about myself. I think about my younger brother. I think about some of the people that I've brought into my circle as friends. And also not just that, I think about folks who have been predatory towards myself and others who have that sensitive disposition, have never really been able to identify it. And I saw it and it was like, oh my God, I think this woman might know something about me that I don't know about me, that I can't articulate properly. Let's go into the highly sensitive people and what that is and what it means.
Oh, I love it. And you know, the self-awareness that you already have is a testament to your ability to notice. So high sensitivity itself is a trait. So to answer the question, what is this thing we're talking about? It's not a disorder, it's a trait. And by that, this is Dr. Elaine Aaron's work from the mid 90s. And she stepped into the work as a psychologist after going to see a therapist of hers who was, they were talking through things and the therapist was like, well, I think you might just be highly sensitive. And Elaine sat with that thought and went, wait a minute, let me dig into this. So there are 100 species of animals that are highly sensitive. They've researched this in different animals to notice a collection of ways of being that show up consistently in a highly sensitive person. And I can walk through those, but overall, it's that our nervous systems are always on. They're highly perceptive, they're highly responsive, we're incredibly vigilant. We are the noticers of what's going on. You mentioned empaths as well. Dr. Aaron wants to make a little bit of a distinguishment between the two, because there's been quite a lot of scientific research around high sensitivity. Empathy and being an empath rather is a little hard to prove scientifically. So she likes to maintain a distance, but I say I think empaths are on the extreme end of sensitivity, because this ability to tune in, my sister is an empath. So I have a lot of room for what we know and we can measure, and then for an openness as well to kind of understand Well, just because I haven't seen it, don't understand it, don't experience it, I can't say it doesn't exist. So what am I going to be open to? So high sensitivity, one in five people show up with this trait, possibly more. The awareness of it, though, very, very low. It's considered a neurodivergent way of thinking. Mm-hmm. But right now we're in a world that thinks, a lot of people hear neurodivergent and they think autism first. Mm-hmm. They might know that it actually expands to include ADHD, dyslexia, dyscalculia, dyspraxia, all kinds of other symptoms or disorders. And I'm using air quotes to mm-hmm. say disorder, because there are a lot of people who would say, well, wait a minute, this is just another way of the brain and the nervous system showing up. Is it really a disorder, or is it just another way of being? So there's a lot of discussion in the community that I want to be sensitive to. Mm-hmm. But the point is, we've got at least one in five people out there. And right now, because of what we've been through in the world through the pandemic and what we're seeing now happen with Russia and Ukraine, there are, and climate change, right? We've got existential challenge going on. And because of that, the neurotypical brain in the UK is being shown to suffer from, or the same signs as one who would suffer from PTSD. And we know with PTSD that high sensitivity is part of the experience. So right now, the relevancy of understanding what sensitivity means, if you're feeling that, and how to live with it better, that's what the Happy Space movement, and I love that he changed it, is a movement as well, because there are deep shifts that need to happen in the world to this openness and understanding the way we need to be. And I think sensitivity is part of it.
I very much appreciate the depth of this. This isn't just the fact that, you think about the stereotypical, when you think of somebody highly sensitive, oh, okay, it means that their feelings get hurt easily. And that might be again, one of many, many different, ways that this HSP would manifest itself, but you just listed a whole bunch of other ways that do that. Some that model border on the idea of maybe a disorder or something that could be more concretely diagnosed. But I love the fact that it does encompass so many different things and provide so much food for thought for folks. The idea that, again, let's go back to the people who might get their feelings hurt easily, mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you do have techniques for people to deal with this specific set of traits that they have that manifest as they live everyday life, as they go to work, as they get cut off in traffic, as they go through relationships, yeah. That kind of a thing. I'm very excited about the idea of this, because there's a lot of guys who are feeling this way, but don't necessarily talk about it. Right. Are aware. You talk about awareness. So yeah, this is a great conversation to have.
Yeah, thank you. Well, one thing I should say is the trait is equally spread between men and women. So the men out there is easily that 20%. And if you think you're a creative individual, I'm going to suggest it's probably higher. If you're in a healing profession, I'm going to suggest it's probably higher. If you've got that empathy, I can run through, if it might be helpful for listeners, I think running through the four top traits,
definitely
elements in the trait that can really like listen for these things. And if you're curious, I created a very fun, lighthearted quiz. And if you tick off the boxes there, you'd be like, oh yeah, she's speaking my language. So if you're curious, can check that out. But
where do you find the quiz? Let's go right there. Where do you find
the awesome quiz? So the easiest place is happyspacepod.com. And if you go there, you'll find the quiz, you'll find the podcast, you'll find the online community. It's the one-stop shop for learning about this and also connecting with like-minded people. So by all means, feel free to check that out. But the four different elements of the trait, I like to use the analogy, and I came up with this term for it based on Elaine Aron's work, seed, S-E-E-D. I like that analogy because it implies you've got everything you need and you can grow it beautifully, right? So sometimes we're at different stages of growth, though, and I will fully admit to teaching what I need to learn, right? There's definitely that in my journey. So let me take you through seed real quick here. S is for sensitivity to stimulation. So We will be those noticers with that nervous system, that response that is on. We will be noticing a rise in humidity. We'll be noticing a rough texture that'll be like, take those tags out of my shirt. We'll be noticing a shift in energy in the room, a facial expression. We'll notice a group of people and like, something's not working here. We'll be sensing a lot of what's going on. Sometimes that's great because we have that extra knowledge and insight. Sometimes it's absolutely overwhelming. I'm a bit nervous these days because my neighbors downstairs are going to start demolition of a wall in their unit. And I'm living on like eggshells when it's going to start and what kind of noise is going to come up. And I know I'm going to need to take preventative action to find other places to work at certain times. So noticing that sensitivity to subtle stimuli, huge. The first E is for empathy. We are off the charts sensing and feeling what other people are experiencing. Mm-hmm. This is might be why watching the news can be really overwhelming. We can get really emotionally exhausted. While we're amazing caregivers, we can really burn out if we're not careful carrying the emotional load of what we're feeling. Mm-hmm. The second E is our emotional perception or responsiveness. We have an opportunity though here. Our brains react more quickly. There's one, I think it was on a reel or a TikTok where Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm going to like need to talk to Jake. Okay. He's talking to another actor. I think it's Tom something. And I'm so not culturally on top of my game here, but the one actor was talking about how he really was sensitive to loud noises. And while he's in this moment of sensitive expression to an audience, but two men sitting there, mm-hmm. Jake shouts at him in this thing. And Tom has a startled reaction because Jake heard the sensitivity and went for it. Mm-hmm. And yep. It might've been a ploy to be humorous, but in that moment, it was cruel. Mm. And so there's a beautiful example of not having room and not even embracing and having an openness for someone who's actually bravely saying and talking about their sensitivity. If I can find the link, I will send it to you.
Yeah, please do. Have it. Absolutely.
Yeah. But there's an example of how we don't have, we can be aware of how we're feeling. We can be so self-aware. And you talked about what you've noticed in yourself. I'm like, oh yeah, tick right there. But if we are triggered or stressed or depleted, we can have a Will Smith moment at the Oscars and unleash, yeah. Right? All of our emotions can bubble up and out, and we are not bringing our best self to a moment. So a lot of what I do is based on a lot of self-learning and an experimentation here on how to architect our lives, but also how to define boundaries and defend them with grace. And it's a journey to figure out, how do we do that? It's more than words. It's body posture. It's our own energy. What are we putting out that we are inviting back from others? So mm-hmm. That's a whole thing. The last item in the four elements of the trait is D, and that's for depth of processing. And that's talking about the fact that we deeply think about things. So I'm wondering, Mike, if you watch a movie that happens mm-hmm. to be emotionally compelling.
Yes.
How do you feel after that movie? Are you like, okay, let's just go catch a, let's just go, well, just like go ride the subway, or let's go go-karting right now, or let's, or are you like me and you're like, I need, that needs to land with me for a little bit. I'm like processing it afterwards.
You know, it's funny how you bring that up as you were going through the two E's, the empathy and the emotion. I thought about with one of the things that you said, it triggered a thought in me. Did you ever watch the show The Office?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So I'll tell you this, there are moments in that show. And I mean, that show is brilliant. And I mean, I know folks who worked on it, and we talk about this all the time. You talk about the manipulation of emotion, and awareness of that. To me, that is a phenomenal example to figure out how sensitive you might actually be. There were moments in that show, because that show took the emotion of awkwardness, and many others as well. Like, I mean, you know, ask about how a movie, you know, in The Office, I would laugh bellowing laughter. I would also cry during the sensitive moments, you know, when Jim proposed to Pam or, you know, when Michael proposed to Holly, that was unbelievable. Tears, you know, and I'm in my 40s now. So sometimes a Gillette commercial will make me cry. But I think about Awkward though, because that show was razor sharp about taking awkward situations and really, really punching it home. There are some moments in that show I literally have to fast forward. It's too cringeworthy. It's so much. I'm so cringing so much that it's overwhelming. And that was one of the things that came into my mind as you were going through the E's. So I really appreciate you bouncing that back, asking me how I feel about a movie. That was the thing that came to me right there.
Yeah. When I watched the whole This Is Us, that's a show about compassion. That's like every episode, there's compassion after compassion. And I don't know about you, but I've found my life being more and more full as I understand this more about myself. I am playing Spot the HSP now, which is kind of fun. Oh my gosh, that's why I resonate so well. I feel so understood with this group. Oh my gosh, that artist is, oh my God, clearly they're HSP, right? Alanis Morissette is a fellow Canadian who is out loud and proud about being HSP. She's the subject of Elaine Aaron's first movie, Sensitive, The Untold Story. And so Alanis makes an appearance and I'm like, you know, and her writing is so raw about emotion and experience, right? Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of incredible talent to celebrate that comes out of the creativity that comes out of that deep processing.
I was on a show a couple of weeks ago. I'm a big David Letterman guy. And so I've got some people in my circle who worked for the show and are part of improving his legacy and things. And I was on that show and we were talking about some of the guests that were on a show and artists in particular. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how I think about Kanye. I think Kanye is one that I think polarizes everybody for a variety of reasons. I took it off of him and I went back to Prince. And it's funny how we will take as much of the beautiful art from these people, whether it is music, whether it's a performance in a movie, whether it's art that's on the walls or in a display somewhere, and we'll take as much as we possibly can. But the moment other behaviors show up, many times we try and reject that or try and control it or try and put them in a box. Well, if you want somebody to be that artistic and you want somebody to put out, you know, 1999 or somebody put out Jesus Walks, you're also going to have to understand that there's other things that go on in these minds, these artists' minds, that might not be as appealing, but you're not going to get that art without that depth of other feelings as well.
We're complicated humans. Yeah. You know, there's a lot that's common between us, but we are complicated and we deserve to have hold on to that compassion when we're thinking about others, I think. Yes. Even if somebody's doing terrible things.
Yeah.
I think, and I examined this in my own family. I mean, I grew up and my parents had both grown up with very displays of violence and tempers and anger. Mm-hmm. And of course, processed it in their way. And I've further processed it now, but to understand and to look back on my dad with compassion for what he went through, to understand what he became as ultimately one of the most compassionate people I know, but who had a wicked temper too.
Yes. So I know all about that. My dad went on a journey between 58 and 63. He went on a personal development journey because he was going to lose it all because of his temper. He's going to lose my mom. He's going to lose everything. And the guy went through a journey. I've actually had him on this podcast where I've actually been able to talk with my dad now in his 70s about his journey from where he was to where he is now. Mm-hmm. And to me, what you're talking about is so important right now because, you know, I think you and I are both Gen X. And I think about how we were, you know, our generation in many ways were the rebels. Yeah, you know, you think about the flannel wearing, coffee house drinking, Nirvana listening, Nirvana, you know, like, screw what the baby boomers told us, the lies that we're told. We're going to make things differently. And we had friends starting to come out of the closet and doing all these things and living their best life, thinking that we were going to make the generation next behind us grateful. But That's not the case right now, because the generations behind us are looking at what us and the baby boomers did and how we lived, and they're going, we're canceling you. Or we're going to talk about sensitivity in a different way, where we're not going to take into consideration the places that you've been and the things that you've gone through and the carving of the path through the jungle that you did. We're just going to bitch about the path not being up to the standard that we want it to be. And it's so ironic to see that the idea of us coming together and actually being able to put ourselves in whoever it is, whether it's the Duck Dynasty guy or Donald Trump for that matter, like what are the pathways that were created to make this behavior? And that empathy and that compassion that you're talking about is paramount, especially today, as far as I'm concerned.
I really do think so. And one important point to make is actually that highly sensitive people who developed from very stable, nurturing, secure relationship with their parents,
yes,
go on to perform incredibly in society. They are very successful. They navigate relationships well. But if somebody's come through trauma, boy, there's a lot of damage to do because we don't feel safe. And so we can't claim those boundaries. And that's where therapy is highly, highly recommended for highly sensitive people that have had very difficult experiences growing up. And that work with therapy and potentially coaching as well can help someone navigate to really then achieve that kind of rich, fulfilling life and navigating relationships so well that the secure children came through. And I think it's important to look back and just imagine a lot of people at 2 and 3 years old, even yourself, imagine yourself, if you're being rough on yourself, if your inner critic is a beast, imagine yourself at 3 years old and carry that version of you through your day.
Yes.
And let the love flow, because invitations of love and inclusion and compassion will be what invites our best performance, not punitive talk and diminishing who we are.
Well, and it goes back to the old phrase, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. Violence begets violence, and at some point there's got to be an interrupter. And I love what you're talking about. I'm a Brené Brown fan. I think about the stuff that she's actually made shame a topic that I want to read about. And if you think about even the word shame, it's like, I want to get away from that word. And the idea of sitting across from somebody who may be spewing out something that is exactly the opposite of how you feel. And if you're able to kind of become aware in that moment, and like you said, I'm just trying to put an exclamation point on what you said, because it's so important, Claire. And it's a technique that anybody can use, where somebody is spewing out stuff. If you imagine them as a baby, you might even be able to imagine them going through trauma that they went through as a baby or a child to make them act the way that they're acting right now. It's literally like you're driving down the highway, the RPMs are really, really high, and suddenly you realize there's a fifth gear that you can go into, a fifth gear of empathy, and it takes all the pressure off, and it takes the emotion, it takes the momentum of wanting to combat what they're saying right out of it when you can empathize with somebody like that.
Superpower. Yeah. And I love Brené as well. It's interesting. In a recent podcast she did with her sisters around her latest book, Atlas of the Heart, she talks about being highly vigilant as a child. And I'm like, of course, my play spot, the HSP is alive and well. Yes. And I'm like, vigilant, huh, sister? Wait a minute. So if you know anybody in Brené's staff, like hook me up. I would love to be in conversation with her, because I think, you know, with Susan Cain's work in the book Quiet, she brought the topic of conversation and, of course, introversion to the table.
Yes.
On that note, just as a thought for listeners, while it's split 50-50 men and women, it's 70% introverts, 30% extroverts in the highly sensitive community. Mm-hmm. And so it's just an interesting nuance. You can be extroverted and be highly sensitive, which presents a bit of a conundrum out there, because you're a people person. We are jamming right now and like loved meeting you from the second we connected on camera. Yes. And you might still need a heck of a lot of downtime. It's like, what's going on, Mike? Why aren't you like this 100% of the time?
Exactly. Well, and I mean, I know a lot of creatives in my life who are the exact same way. And when I am on, if you want to call it that, I'm living my best life. I'm exactly who I need to be. Yeah. When I'm public speaking, I can, it's so weird to explain, but I can take the energy out and I can throw it back on people. And it's an amazing experience doing this. Like I said, I could do five of these in a row, but the next day might be Netflix and my boxers watching, you know, old Letterman clips on YouTube for four hours.
You'll need no demands.
To recharge, right? To get it. Yeah, absolutely.
You'll need no demands.
Yes. And I think a lot of creatives know about that. And I think a lot of people who are creatives on the inside, but that doesn't manifest itself in their daily life, unfortunately, because they're doing all the things that are on the list. And
well,
this is
where
people
get- things. Yeah. There's our cultural pressure to hustle and get things done. And we measure success by doing, not being.
Yep.
And to be creative, you got to have a whole lot of being and mind wandering for the essence of the work to come together and to come out. So our world does not get that. And so, you know, I talk a lot to corporations about, you know, designing the workday and the workspace so that we can invite the richest performance from everybody who's there, not just the people that are the doers, but the thinkers as well. So we need restrooms to be restrooms, for example, right? We need more of this embedded in our culture. I was talking to on the sixth episode of the podcast that I have going on around Happy Space.
Yeah.
I interview a professor of neuroscience for architecture. And she's in Sao Paulo. And she told me that she went out to a bench to go lie in the sun. And she was told by city staff that she was not allowed to lie on a bench.
Oh, man.
And so this is where you might have the design, you might have that nap room, that quiet room where you can go rest and restore, but you might have a culture that says, you loser, what are you going into that room for? Like, what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. So we need this evolution. That's what the Happy Space movement is really about, to understand that as human animals, we need to look after our whole experience and our way of being and what we really need to sustain that energy. And for different people, it looks different. And we need to make room for that.
Oh my God, I love this conversation so much. I hate that time is going so quickly. I want to get to some productivity stuff before we, because you know, it's a podcast aimed at men or people who want to understand men or people who want to relate, who want to help, the current situation of where men are in our culture and that sort of thing. The idea of productivity is something that I think that to many men, it's intrinsic. It is something that is genetically just in there. The idea of compartmentalizing and doing prioritizing things properly and doing that, I think speaks highly to many men naturally. I want to talk about productivity and how you have married the idea of taking advantage of sensitive natures and applying that with productivity and how you have applied that into your all your corporate gigs. I mean, you've worked with companies from like Facebook to all the TD Bank, one of the biggest banks in the world, and many, many, many other groups. You know, I want to talk about the idea of productivity and the mark you're making on the world when it comes to that word.
Oh, thank you. I would say actually more than half of my clients are men now. So I am thrilled to learn with people and work with people and learn from them what their challenges are. And it varies. And I find it fascinating that there isn't a place to talk about some of these things because there is an expectation that it's naturally innate and this get things done energy is there, right?
Yep.
But wait a second, but what about this, you know, this construct? I'll take one of my client examples right now. Lovely, lovely man and a family man, also a conscientious contributor, really doing well in his career and progressing, but also realizing, wait, how do I navigate this? I want to be showing up as a wonderful dad. I also need to show up as a leader at work. And what does that look like? And at the same, I want to have some time for myself. So one example of something that I see repeatedly is this concept of claiming back time at the end of the day, using the phone with what we has sometimes been called revenge bedtime procrastination. right? this is a nasty thing that I keep seeing show up when it's like, you know what? I've given to my work. I've been present with my family. I just want some me time. And heck yes, you need some me time, but let's break it down for a second. Let's look at how we honor mind, body, spirit in our lives. And let's fundamentally understand what I call our productivity table stakes. And I use like a poker analogy, right? You got it's eight-sided. Imagine an eight-sided poker table. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Easily done.
Right? If you like gemstones, and my dad was a jewelry man, he liked gemstones. Imagine a cut jewel and each of those eight sides is connected. The light is flowing from one side to the other. There's eight mm-hmm. different elements there. Sleep is one of them. If you sabotage your sleep, you borrow from tomorrow, right? We don't want that to happen. So the decision you make at night is the first impact on your day tomorrow, right? Yes. So if we could get more clear about, gosh, I need some me time. Okay, what could that look like so that you get the me time? I'm not about depriving a need. I'm about finding a way to do it that doesn't self-sabotage.
Yes.
How can you do that? What does it look like? Does it mean not using the phone or a specific app? Does it mean choosing to read a chapter of a book, which is mm-hmm. far more finite and doesn't have intrusions that technology is designed? It's designed to say, give me your brain.
Absolutely.
Allow notifications, Mike. Come on, you want them, don't you?
Yep.
No, right? So how can you design your bedtime ritual? We put our kids to bed, right? I mean, tucking the kids in, giving them a bath, reading them a story. How are you going to put yourself to bed?
Yeah.
How are you going to invite falling into repose so that you're going to get, I'm going to say, you know, start with an assumption you need 7.5 hours, work from there to find it out if you're one of the people that needs 9 hours, mm-hmm. claim the sleep that you need. And then, oh my gosh, that's a beautiful foundation in those productivity table stakes to anchor your human animal showing up with the energy it needs to get through the day and also make really good decisions all the way through that day. That's just one example.
I'm so attracted to your vocabulary and these ideas. They seem like water in the desert. They really do. I want to go deeper into that a little bit because I want to talk about how myself, but also other men that I've talked to feel and the idea of the night before and the preparation for the next day as well, I think is really, really important versus mm-hmm. the night before and having an aimless next day. What do you feel about, where do you weigh in on the idea of knowing what it is you're going to be doing the next day before you go to bed?
Oh my gosh. Critical. I say
critical. Okay.
Critical. In one word, critical. I invite you to plan the upcoming week sometime before it hits. So sometime before Monday morning, whether it's Friday afternoon and you want to check out for the weekend, or it's a lot of leaders I saw in my career growing up was Sunday evening. Sometime before Monday, you plan your week and you scan the next. So then you'll be like, oh yeah, I've got a 3-hour presentation I'm delivering on Wednesday of the, and you'll have a sense of what's coming up. You're not going to be like getting luggage off the conveyor belt and it's all hitting you and nobody's taking the luggage off, right?
Yeah.
So we plan the week and we scan the next. And what I need you to do is I need you to use a calendaring, a scheduling system to help the brain with this really abstract concept of time, right?
Yes.
It's like, you can't pin it down. Wear a watch. I do have a Fitbit now. And the reason I sometimes wear it is when I want a trigger to pull my attention to something, not to say you have email, you have Slack, you know,
no.
like no, check you the things you already know
hours.
Exist. Right?
Right.
You turn all the notifications off, except for, you have a podcast with Mike right now, and you need to show up on time, be in your best, look in your best, know if you need a nap before, like do what you need to do to show up at your best. And schedule in your calendar, I call it creating your own roadmap for the day. You need to have those anchors in your day that are your commitments to yourself. So it's your bedtime, perhaps. You have a bedtime alarm. You don't need a morning alarm if you're getting enough sleep. So 99% of days, I don't use an alarm. It's if I'm traveling somewhere and I've got an unearthly, you know, an ungodly, earthly, early flight.
Something out of the ordinary.
something out of the ordinary, then I'll use a morning alarm. But otherwise, I set my life up. So, and my cats help. You might have heard them in the background. My cats help will say, you know, our body clocks are telling us. So it's 7 o'clock in the morning is breakfast time. So I need to navigate and set my life up to know what I'm going to do so I can also park my thinking and have a good sleep. I don't have to carry my what's my to-do list tomorrow in my brain.
I love park your thinking. That's a very, very powerful thing. Like, I'm a big fan of the conscious brain versus the subconscious brain. And you and I right now, I love this analogy. I don't know where I heard it. I wish I could reference whoever said it to me, because now I'm just kind of plagiarizing stuff that I hear, but that's just podcast life, I guess. The idea, like right now, you and I are interfacing, right, with the conscious part of our technology, the computer. The conscious part is the part that we see on the monitor. If we're doing spreadsheets, if we're writing emails, whatever, that's the conscious part. But in reality, there are tens of thousands of processes going on in the subconscious part of the computer. That's where the computer is really working its ass off right now. Yeah. Even though what we're experiencing is just the conscious part, our brain is the same thing. And all of the things that you're talking about, use our subconscious, as you mentioned, planning out your week a little bit. Okay, knowing Wednesday, I got to go kill it at a presentation. If you give that a little bit of thought and a little bit of consideration, guess what? Your subconscious is going to be doing its thing while you're eating breakfast, while you're exercising, 100%. While you're doing whatever it is that you're doing. Yeah. And if you don't, then you're just running on the surface. You're just running on the conscious mind, which is not nearly as effective as if you get your subconscious doing its thing at the same time.
Exactly. There's a friend of mine, a speaker as well, and she'll say, give your assistant a job to do. Ask your assistant to do something while you sleep. You know, I'd like you to work on this presentation, not to worry about it, but to actually, I was talking about letting the back brain go.
Yep.
Just like plant a seed and let it go there. So yeah. And if you think about your work and separate planning from execution, that's, you know, or even like, let's say you're gonna reorganize the garage, let's say.
Yeah.
Separate the planning from the execution.
Oh my God. And that's profound right there. Talk a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, separate the two. Don't look at your garage on Saturday morning and go, I gotta nail this now. Think about what you wanna do. Think about the kinds of things that are in there. Think about the different zones you wanna create. Think about what might help make removing those items good. Like arrange for a pickup of items to donate. Mm-hmm. Set it up so that the recycling day is right the next day. Like think about where this event is happening, when this event is happening, who can help it. Do all that with when your mental energy is really strong, and your emotional energy. Execution, have your roadmap, and it's like Saturday morning, you've got the supplies you need. Now you just need to knock it out. If you try and mix the two, it's 1 o'clock on Saturday and you still haven't even got yourself going. So I'd say work your pecs is what I say. It's like planning, execution, and then calibration. So if you're going to do something repeatedly, look back on it and say, what could have been better? Note it down, put it in the planning for next time. Pay yourself forward. So work your pecs.
I adore this conversation. I hate how slippery time is. I say it every episode, time is slippery. People are going to get tired of hearing me say that, but it's the truth. It does. I want to be sensitive to your time, but at the same time, this is the beginning of a relationship, and that excites me. I know that our paths are going to cross more and more. Let us and our viewers and listeners know where to find you. So Happy Space, talk about Happy Space, please. Talk about that, because this is an offshoot of the other things that you do, from your corporate training to your coaching and all of that. Then you're building this Happy Space movement. Please talk about that as we start to take her home.
Oh, thank you. So yeah, everything I do, speaking, media work, I work with brands. I did a TV segment this morning, which is why I'm fully made up for you today. So everything is at clairekumar.com if you're interested in that full scope of what I do. But this Happy Space movement is really mixing personal and professional passions together to invite that more tender world that we need, so that people don't get marginalized in the workplace the way I did. I was basically could not find a construct to work in 2008. I ended up tumbling down the stairs in 2007 and went at the very end of the year and just went, something's got to shift. I can't sustain my energy for this anymore. So became an entrepreneur, and this Happy Space movement, I invite you all to think of who you know who might be highly sensitive. Maybe it's you. Come take the quiz, join the community, be part of the movement. I think there's a real opportunity to spread the word here so people feel understood and be part of something. And then if you're a leader, think about how you can have a more inclusive culture to invite those sensitive people to thrive. We're your above average performers if we're given the opportunity and the right environment to shine. So, you know, right now it's kind of a golden moment, and I really want to be part of that and invite you to do the same.
You know, I think about the idea of being generous, and how the idea of being generous is, I've heard this many, again, broken record. I heard this from Letterman, actually. He talked about it, how being generous is actually a self-serving act because you feel so damn good about being generous. I feel like this is related to what you're talking about. If you are highly sensitive, if you have someone in your life that's highly sensitive, it behooves you to help them hone that skill. If it's you, you're going to perform better. If you're a leader and you have these folks that are in your crew, if you're leading a family, whatever that is, these people are going to be more productive, active, in fact, rising stars, in fact, the stars of the organization or group, whatever we're talking about, if we nurture that. And I think with the hustle and bustle and the hustling that you talked about earlier, that is a very easy thing to put on the wayside and not prioritize it, because shit's got to get done. And the idea of making that a priority, in fact, the idea that you have a platform that has not only made that a priority, but simplified it enough that people can easily understand and translate some of these truths and then apply them to their lives. Well, it seems like you got to feel pretty good about yourself, Claire, because you're being pretty generous in how you're improving the world.
Oh, thank you. No, the best thing is to get a message from someone who's feels touched by the message, like you do. I'm sure you experienced it. I got one this morning. Thank you for the work that you do. And that, if
nothing like
there
it,
isn't fuel, I don't know what is. That is, that it just keeps me going. And yeah, so my fundamental belief is everyone deserves a happy space. So,
oh, everyone deserves a happy space. We're going to finish it there. Claire, C-L-A-R-E. Kumar, K-U-M-A-R.
Yeah,
Kumar.com.
No third eye. Yep. No third eye. And Kumar is in Harold and. So then it's super easy.
You are delightful. And you are also infotastic. And if you know me, I'm a cerebral guy. Somebody who is infotastic it's one of the highest compliments that I can give. I can't wait to see how our paths cross more, how Happy Space and He Changed It cross paths more. If you have content and you want us to display it and give portals to how to get there, we're going to do that. I by the way, when we started this thing, thank you for talking about what Candy and her team are doing, that He Changed It. It's as Candy likes to say, you know, because I mean, it's startup life, right? And you know all about startup life. You know, it's not necessarily low-hanging fruit, but there's orchards and orchards and orchards of it. And I just want to say thank you for the encouraging things that you said about He Changed It as well.
My great pleasure to connect with you, and just, yeah, let's ride alongside each other and make stuff happen.
Can't wait. They go by so quickly. Again, I say that every episode, but it's the damn truth. We are so excited about the movement that is He Changed It, and all of the arms that we're linking in that process. I'm grateful for you, every single viewer, every single listener, whether you're on the YouTubes or on your whatever your podcast persuasion application is. Thank you very much for giving us a chance to take your attention, even for a little while here. Again, if you haven't downloaded He Changed It, or you know somebody that needs to download He Changed It, come be an early adopter, download it. We're in both the Apple and the Android stores. Just search He Changed It. You will find the He app. And yeah, like and subscribe the podcast, and let's improve some people's lives together. That's it. That's another episode of HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. Go change something.